On this week's 51%, Tony and Grammy Award winner Renee Elise Goldsberry shares the inspiration behind her new solo record, Who I Really Am.
I think it's important to celebrate the sharing of a new side of you.
And a mural in New York recognizes the work of two teenage poets from the 19th century. I'm Jesse King. It's all up next on 51%.
I was standing around like one of those girls I had seen in a movie. The whole world was a movie back then. I had my sunglasses on. I wanted to be seen without seeing Shiloh or Lita. I wasn't really in it. I didn't really get it.
You're listening to 51%, a WAMC production dedicated to women's issues and experiences. Thanks for joining us. I'm Jesse King. We've got a great lineup of interviews and stories for you today on Women in the Arts. Our main guest today is the Tony and Grammy Award-winning actress Renee Elise Goldsberry. Goldsberry is a Broadway veteran and perhaps best known for originating the role of Angelica Schuyler in the hit Hamilton, which, believe it or not, celebrated its 10th anniversary this year. But Goldsberry has also held starring roles in Rent, The Color Purple, The Lion King, and more. On screen, her credits include the Netflix series Girls 5 Eva, The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks, The Good Wife, and One Life to Live. And this summer, Goldsberry released her debut studio album, Who I Really Am, from Borderlite Entertainment. Blending pop, soul, funk, and gospel, Who I Really Am allows Goldsberry to get personal rather than playing a character. Goldsberry recently spoke with WAMC's Sarah LaDuke about the record and some of her other latest projects. She says the record was long in the making.
I actually started this album in 2020. So when time is brought up, my first thought is, what took so long? But you know, what's crazy, as is often the case with most things in my life, I always feel in the process frustrated because things are taking so long. And then when it's time, it feels like the perfect timing. And that's how I feel in this particular instance. I feel like the timing is perfectly ripe. I feel that I'm ready to promote this album. And it's an interesting thing to promote an album when I'm used to promoting other projects like television shows and characters and things that I have a degree of separation from. It's a different thing to promote an album, as you said, that's this personal. And I am ready to do it.
The first word on the album, the first lyric, is introducing. It's in the title track, Who I Really Am. Why did you feel that you needed to emphasize, even with everything that people believe they know about you, you needed to emphasize and introduce yourself in your own terms?
I think it's important to celebrate the sharing of a new side of you. I think that the people that have been down for me, and God bless them, might not necessarily know that I'm a singer and a songwriter. And I think an introduction is in order. I also think that I'm introducing a concept, and that is there are things that people don't brag about that are so valuable about who they are. And I would love to introduce you to that side of me as well, because I recognize there is a really worthy contribution that I can give talking about things that are more like struggles. And I'm excited about that. I actually also think that introductions tend to fall short. And I don't intend in the 13 tracks to fall short. I intend to share everything I can think of.
What are some of the things that you wanted to make sure that you included that were important aspects of your identity, of your purpose, of your personality that you wanted to make sure were in the songs that you think that you know people were missing without having heard your original music?
I think what you put on an album, you know, the curation of it tells almost as much as the songs do, you know, individually. And I was really excited about sharing my really broad taste in music. And I also think as a performer, as a singer who is known for singing theater, mm-hmm. we sing a lot of different kinds of music. That's another thing about timing that works. I think we are no longer assuming that our audience is small. Our audience is incredibly diverse, interests and loves, and love so many different genres of music. And I'm glad that when you hear this album, you have no idea what's coming next when one song ends.
How did you find what type of song, what genre of music, be it sort of, you know, gospel or funk or ballad? There's sort of like a 90s R&B feel to a bunch of the songs that I really love. How did you pair the lyrics and the stories with the type of music that you would layer them over?
It happens really organically. I never thought I want to do this kind of song. I think it just happens. There's a song on the album called Normal. It's such a pop song. I never thought, oh, I want to put a pop song on the album. But it felt most rebellious as a pop song. And that seems a bit like an oxymoron. But I feel like for me, at this time in my life, at this age, to put a straight up pop song that says, I'm normal, this is may not be what you expect from me. It feels controversial. It feels like there's a rebellion in it. And that just came organically out of the messaging of the song.
A lot of times when I speak with singer-songwriters who are known for being singer-songwriters, and that's, you know, they're not actors otherwise or in a different lane of performance, I have to remind myself, or they remind me, that the I of their songs isn't always them. It's a narrator, because their manifestation of the lyrics is different. But this is every I is you. The experiences in the songs are from you.
That is so funny. Almost, yes. Almost in every single circumstance, yes. And I think now that you mentioned this, and this is blowing my mind, the two times that the I is not me are the two songs I didn't write.
That Sarah Bareilles wrote?
Sarah Bareilles wrote a brilliant song called Don't Want to Love You. I see myself in it, but mm-hmm. I didn't. It's not written from my perspective in a specific moment, even though it's so universally beautiful and the truth is so universal that I have definitely been in that situation. And though many people come up to me and call me Angelica Schuyler,
right.
I am not in fact Angelica Schuyler. So I have never actually been in that moment in the wedding outside of the Broadway show Hamilton. Those are the two eyes that are not me, but all of the rest of them, come to think of it, are 100% the exposing of my actual life and my perspective on it in the form of a song.
So then I'm to assume, which of course we all know what they say about that, but that Staring is about your lovely husband.
It is absolutely about my lovely husband, and staring at him in a way that hopefully makes him feel a little uncomfortable.
Yeah. There are a lot of themes of trust in the record, learning to trust other people, telling people in the lyrics that you trust them now and you're willing to rely on them. There's also faith and trust in a higher power. There's elements of God in your music.
Mm. I'm actually glad that you hear that, because that is one song that I wrote that could have gone on this album that didn't. I actually had a straight up spiritual song. And in an album that I consider a home for the outliers, that's what the album turned into. It turned into, you can put Staring on this album, you can put Love Returned on this album, which is very much singer, storyteller. You might be hearing me in a coffee shop tell a story. And the spiritual song didn't make it on. I will release it. But the straight up spiritual song I held back to release individually. And so I'm thrilled to hear that my greatest source of strength and identity, which is my spirituality and my belief in God, is still exists in this album. That makes me happy.
You, of course, worked with Sarah Bareilles closely on the excellent, excellent series Girls 5 Eva. How did her penning a song for your album, you know, stem from that? And did you know each other through music or theater circles before the show, or did you meet working on that project?
One of the brilliant parts of Sarah Bareilles, and there are many, mm-hmm. I was doing Williamstown Theater Festival years before, and some people came up to me and asked me if I would sing with them this song that she had written called Many the Miles. I had never heard of her. They played the song, my brain exploded, and I just proceeded to copy every single lick she ever did. And I met her when I was in Hamilton. She came, she was writing Waitress at the time, and I got to see her backstage after Hamilton, and I told her I was a huge fan. And then in the middle of 2020, when I was in a Zoom meeting Tina Fey and Meredith Scardino asking me to be in Girls 5 Eva, the only other person that had been cast was Sarah Bareilles, who I knew just, you know, kind of in passing. But I remember one of the major reasons why I said yes to doing that job was because I thought, I'll be friends with Sarah Bareilles if I do this job. And it worked out for me. She's one of my greatest friends in the whole world. One day we were on set. I had the courage to admit that I was writing an album. And the first thing she said was, I have a song. And the first song she sent was, I Don't Wanna Love You. I don't wanna hold on so damn tight to somebody else's hands. I wanna wake up, wanna come to you. I don't. It's perfect.
Cannot get a better friend than that.
Oh, cannot have a better friend than Sarah Bareilles.
The label decided I was difficult just because I wouldn't let my backup singers wear makeup and refused to play venues that also did sports.
Wiki Roy, your incredibly narcissistic and hilarious, talented character on Girls 5 Eva is such a hoot, so funny, not a throwaway moment that isn't just slaying, slaying, slaying. Did you feel like you had a handle on that character from when you first read the script, or did you have to find that mega diva inside of you?
I consider Wiki Roy my Sasha Fierce. Very grateful for her for many reasons, especially now that I'm promoting an album, because she's unapologetically ambitious. When I first encountered the pilot script of Girls 5 Eva, I was just blown away by how many times I would spit take. It's just so funny. So it wasn't her character in particular. Actually, there was one line that she said that it didn't even make the show that I just found brilliant. It was more just this writing team and this concept and being completely blown away by the brilliance of that team and the concept. And then we did a first table read on Zoom because it was COVID. And I got off the meeting. I left the meeting and I went into my bedroom and I thought, they're going to fire me. They're going to fire me. I literally looked at my phone and I waited for it to ring, because while I had been offered the job without an audition, when I read it for the first time on Zoom, I felt so grossly miscast to play the character. I felt like I'd totally blown it. I felt like it was this fantastic character and I had no idea how I was going to embody her. And my phone didn't ring, thank God. And then I went to a costume fitting for Wiki, the very first costume fitting. And when they put those clothes on me, I was in the mirror in that room thinking, this is who she is. Yeah. Hello, Wiki. I was 100% dependent on this brilliant team of designers and the writers. And when Takesha Sturtevant did my hair, and when they put the clothes on me and I had those words in my mouth and I was on the set with those women, she just shows up. It was so easy.
Our guest is Renee Elise Goldsberry. Her album, Who I Really Am, is available to purchase or stream now. Girls Five Eva, Co-op the Musical, which is the original cast album, co-op episode of Documentary Now, the IFC series. And you were recently Mrs. T on Everybody's Live with John Mulaney's Netflix talk show. These are really, really hilarious women that you're playing and you know, beats and comedy, and you're hanging out with, rolling with hugely comedic talents.
Yeah.
But your, you know, first part of your career doesn't reflect like comedy chops so much. Were you always funny, and are you finding your way into the comedy world and enjoying it, or comedic acting, I should say?
I don't know if you're allowed to say this about yourself, but I'm told I was always funny.
I believe it.
People that know me well are like, oh, that's just Renee. If you knew her, that's just Renee. I'm grateful though, because we can be so many things. We're all everything. We're all funny. We're all vulnerable. We're all, you know, we go through all of the things. The question is, do we feel safe enough, or is there a vehicle to access it in a way that anyone can benefit from it or know it? And so what I'm grateful about in terms of this, that role and that show, and then my friends like John Mulaney or Paul Appel, or people that call and give me opportunity to be funny again. I'm grateful. I pinch myself like, what am I doing with these people? But at the same time, I think I'm there for a reason, and until they stop calling, I'm gonna keep showing up.
They're not going to stop calling. I mean, you know, touch wood, I'm not the boss of it, but I can't imagine. You're so funny in all of these.
They might call because I'm one of the few people that would put on that Mrs. T on live television. But yeah, I'm grateful for. I think I have tremendously talented friends now in this industry, and when they welcome me to a party, I show up.
Was Mrs. T an immediate yes?
No. Well, actually, yes. It was an immediate. It was an immediate yes to when John Mulaney sent me a text. We'd just done a show together on Broadway over Christmas called.
That's right. I saw you both in that. That was the cast
you
that I
did?
Saw.
Yes.
Wonderful. I loved it. Just, I mean, to interrupt you answering a question that I asked, sorry. But when you were playing, that was, you know, vignettes, different scenes. And yes. So you embodied a number of characters. When you were a little girl, it was so sweet. Like I was, because you're not a short person, but you were just like acting so young. And I was like, how is she doing that? Like remembering to be a kid like that. It was so great. I mean, all of it was great, but I specifically remember being like, I want to, you know, pick her up and put her on my hip, even though I couldn't.
I wish you would have. it was, you know, I got to sit on stage. We were sitting in chairs and read stories without props and sets and music. And we just literally sat there and read stories at a pretty hefty ticket price. So it was pretty brave of us to do. And we did it together and it was amazing. And he was leaving there to do this show. And I was just honored to get an invitation to come. I just love people that feel like, hey, I'm doing this thing. And, you know, and I think it takes an incredible amount of bravery to do all of the things we do, but especially comedy, and especially in the way that some people do comedy. They love to be hanging out there. They literally, the scarier it is. I remember one time when we were in All In, somebody said, do you, because we had a week of rehearsal before the show opened, and somebody asked us, did we want to put a teleprompter up so we would know what in the world we were saying? And I remember John Mulaney saying, I really prefer that we don't, because it's scarier. And there are some people that recognize, and I know a lot of them. That's one of my favorite things about being in this career, is that I get to work with a lot of people who just jump off a cliff, not knowing what's going to happen, because they have the faith that something interesting will have to take place. and they become maybe addicted or just comfortable or understand their gift to do that for people, because that's what people don't do. Everybody goes through all of these different things, but very few people will jump off the cliff. So when I was asked to play Mrs. T, I said yes. I had not heard the song. I did not know what I was going to wear. Then they showed me a wig that they wanted me to wear, which was basically a bald cap. And I said no. But then when I got there, the closer we got to the time of the show, start of this live show, I realized, if I'm going to be here, you can't put a toe in. You got to just jump all the way in. And I'm grateful that I did.
Mrs. T gonna live forever. Mrs. T don't need a thing. Mrs. T is getting benched on Muscle Beach while you're sipping cup and grill a cheat. Cover yourself in muscles.
You also this spring hosted Act One of the Tonys next to Darren Criss, and then also Hamilton did a Hamilton medley performance that was so fun to see everybody back together. That must have been a really emotional night for you to see all of your Hamilton people. I know you, of course, have seen some of them over the years, but everybody reassembled, and then also keeping the energy up while hosting the first part of the show, which I thought you did a marvelous, marvelous job.
Thank you for watching that first part of the show as well. It was one of the greatest nights of my life. And I've had a few. Obviously, the first, that our original Tony night was one of the greatest nights of my life. And mm-hmm. I had been looking forward to it ever since I think I was in Puerto Rico with Lynn when he said, I'm going to need you guys for the 10th anniversary, so be ready. So I've been dreaming of the biggest things ever that we could possibly do in this 10th anniversary. And I wasn't really thinking about the Tonys. I didn't know that that would be such a beautiful gift, and it was, for all the reasons that you said. And the first one is that we were all back together, every single one of us. That meant so much to me, especially because if we do this, when we do this again at the 20, we just can't take for granted that we'll have that opportunity to reunite in the same way. So that was a real blessing. I think they did a wonderful job constructing the piece, and to do it on that stage with the family is bigger than this one group of people that were in the original company of Hamilton. The family is all of the Broadway community, and they were there. And the family is the world that loves the show. And I feel that they were with us. We felt their presence, and the love that they're still giving us for it has not waned.
That's good. We all need things like that to keep us kind of, you know, running.
Yes.
There's also a documentary about your life and the
coming of my family.
Right.
I didn't know to ask for that, honestly. I was looking one day, also in COVID, I was looking through my phone. We were promoting Hamilton, the Disney Plus film.
Right.
I was trying to get content off my phone because I thought it'd be the last time anybody cared. Like, the last time anybody's going to care about my videos from Hamilton are going to be now that this movie's out. And so let me try to get it off my phone. And when I was looking on my phone, I recognized in that way that your phone brings together your different events happening at the same time. And I realized, oh my gosh, I had babies. I was a part of this company giving birth to the show while I was raising a very, very young family. And seeing them together, I just felt like, well, that's a story. So I partnered with a documentarian called Chris Bolin and Melissa Hayslip, and we made this film. And it chronicles both things at the same time, that balance of a mother to do this thing on this really heightened stage and also this very personal thing at home at the same time. It's called Brace Yourself. It's called Satisfied.
a word that's just linked with you for the duration of the English language and your life and the song, which is
not bad about it at all.
No, hardly. Renee Elise Goldsberry's new record is Who I Really Am. Thank you so much for sharing your talent and so much of your time with me today.
Thank you so much. It's been so much fun to talk to you. I really appreciate it.
That was Tony and Grammy Award-winning actress and singer Renee Elise Goldsberry speaking with WAMC's Sarah LaDuke. Goldsberry's new record is Who I Really Am.
They say that you should leave them wanting before somebody's wanting you to leave.
Elsewhere, a new poets' mural in Plattsburgh, New York, depicts two teen poets from the 19th century who were recognized by authors such as Washington Irving and Edgar Allan Poe. Leaders of Outside Art, which has been painting murals around the city to celebrate its history and culture, think their latest project just may inspire the next generation of artists. WAMC's Pat Bradley reports.
1, 2, 3.
Yay! A 37 by 33 foot mural on the side of the Express Mart on Bridge Street depicts Lucretia Maria Davidson and Margaret Miller Davidson sitting at a desk with pen and paper. Outside Art and regional officials recently cut a ribbon to dedicate the artwork. Outside Art co-director Amy Guglielmo said planning and fundraising to complete this project had been in the works for more than 3 years.
We've been working with the Clinton County Historical Association for a long time. We wanted this to happen. These women are worthy of being recognized. We should always celebrate women in the arts from our local community and inspire the next writers and future artists from Plattsburgh.
Artist Brendan Palmer Angel designed the mural and did most of the painting.
When I see this mural now, I think about young people having their creativity fostered. And anytime you see someone who has a creative impulse, please foster it. Especially for them, important was their mother, their parents, but especially their mother. So I want to thank my family. That's why I make art, is because they supported my creative impulses from a very early age.
Clinton County Historical Association Executive Director Helen Nerska said the sisters were nationally renowned poets who lived on Cumberland Avenue. An historical marker now designates their former residence.
Lucretia Maria Davidson was born in 1808 and died in 1825. And Margaret Miller Davidson, she was born in 1823 and died in 1838. They lived in this home, and you'll notice they died very young. Margaret was 15, and Lucretia was almost 17. And in that short life, they made a deep impression nationally, and we're very proud that they were part of our community.
Elizabeth Gay first learned about the poets roughly 30 years ago, and then, nearly 8 years ago, moved into the house next door to the Davidsons. She has written Fear of Madness, a fictionalized account of Lucretia Davidson's life.
One day I sat down at my dining room table, and I had a perfect view of the house, and I started researching, and then I started writing. It may sound silly, but I made a promise to Lucretia that I would do what I could to make sure that her story was told. About a year ago, I started volunteering at the Historical Society, and within the first month, Jerry mentioned that the mural was being painted, and Helen mentioned that a marker was going up. And so together, I think we're going to make sure that the sisters are not forgotten.
I'm Pat Bradley, WAMC News.
Thanks for listening to this week's 51%. 51% is a national production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio based in Albany, New York. It's produced and hosted by me, Jesse King. Our associate producer is Madeline Reynolds, and our theme is Lolita by the Albany-based artist Girl Blue. Just a reminder that you can listen to 51% anytime at wamcpodcast.org or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can stay in the loop on all of WAMC shows by signing up for our weekly newsletter, Airwaves, at wamc.org. We hope you'll join us next week. Until then, I'm Jesse King, 51%.
I was every single girl, I was nobody else, I was so sure of myself.
I was 15 and a half. He was a hollow laugh. And I lost my cool somewhere along the way. At night, head on the horse.